This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked. Trembling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people ask Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution is a perfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield. Without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City. But it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
With Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one Burns, Oregon at a time. Yes, one community at a time. This is the radio show that helps you to stop the totalitarian. So welcome to the show. Boy, there's a lot going on. This is a special edition of Agenda 21 Radio because with us, that you're going to be hearing her shortly, is Victoria. You may have heard about Victoria Sharp that the night of the morning of, literally, following the killing by the FBI and the Oregon State Police of Robert Lavoie Finnegan, killing that took place after he was and others were associated with the Bundy, I guess you would say, occupation group in Oregon, were basically ambushed by the Oregon State Police, and as you're going to find out the story, it's a first-hand account. And, you know, the interesting thing is that since this killing of Finnegan has been shown repeatedly now on videotapes and so on, the spin by the FBI, the Federal Investigation, has been enormous. It's, I guess you would say, a very, very going to end up, I think, in the long term, to be quite the black eye on the FBI and how this government is. Because Victoria, when she first did her interview, I listened to it. In fact, a good friend of mine, Jim White, was the one who facilitated posting it up. He and I talked at a great extent about Victoria. Scott Bennett picture, and he lets me know that he's going to be interviewing and having her on his show called Truth Unite, and invited me to be one of the panelists of participants on the show to ask her questions, which I did. Ask her questions and hear her story again. Now, hear her story after she was through the one-sided shooting that took place by the Oregon State Police and the FBI. There was no gunfight. In fact, what there was a one-sided, an assassination attempt on all the others that were in the cars. Yeah, it was going to be a one-sided killing. You see, it was not a shootout. It was a shooting. And the one-sided came strictly from the government gun. At no time do we have any witnesses that indicate that any player with the Bundy group that day touched a gun, unholstered a gun, displayed a gun, or made even towards a gun. Now, I know that the FBI has been doing a marvelous job of spinning around the story that LaVoy was reaching for a 9mm. According to sources that I reached out to, quite frankly, story out that LaVoy did not own a 9mm, but he did own a pistol, a large pistol that he always carried on his right leg. And there are numerous pictures out. We have them posted up on our Facebook and also on Agenda 21 Radio that show you with a large handgun strapped to his right leg. And in fact, in today's show, or in the testimony that you're about to hear from Victoria Sharp, she will describe the gun to you that was strapped to his right leg. At no time did LaVoy Finnegan reach for that gun. At no time. At no time did he reach for that gun. And at no time did he unholster a gun. At no time did he display a gun. Quite frankly, there were no guns that were displayed by the Bundy group. And there were no guns that were fired by the Bundy group. All guns that were fired in a hostile act towards those in the white truck. The white truck. And it was a situation in which they were fired at twice. First time in the first stop. And they were fired at when they were complying with the police requirements to keep their hands outside. Interesting, isn't it? There's a lot to this story. It's not like the FBI wants you to. So sit back, and we're going to be talking very shortly here to Victoria. And first of all, I'd like to say that this is a very, very strong young lady. She has been through a lot, and you're going to discover and for yourself as you can go to our website, agenda21radio.com, and you can actually see the video here that we're talking about. And those of you on YouTube, this will be up on YouTube, so you can actually see and go along with the video. The video runs for about 24 minutes, and I suggest that you get the first generation video that came out by the FBI. It lasts for about 24 minutes, and it's a good quality video. So the resolution images that you'll see there with LaVoy as he exits the truck and so on, and you can actually see them shooting, you can actually get a very, very good visual about what happens. The information contained in Victoria Sharp's testimony is literally earth-shattering. Earth-shattering. And it completely debunks Mark McConnell, who happened to have been a driver, the driver in the green Jeep, the driver who basically said that he took place and said that he had heard and he saw LaVoy charge the police and they shot him. Hello, the guy's a liar. In fact, we think he works for the government. Yeah, this is telling Agenda 21 Radio that they have concerns about him being actually a government stool. And it looks like that with what he is saying, he's got a very sordid history, but how can a person who is a road see the action? He loses all credibility from the get-go. His YouTube that he put out, I mean, the whole thing is a sham on his part. So there's also a bunch of other, as we've been seeing, media, big media and even alternatives that have been popping up, literally popping up, have no history to them, that have been carrying his story. His story that it really asserts that he deserved what he got and that he was charging the police, which is bunk, which is pure bunk. And you're going to hear that here for his presentation. So settle down, and here we go. You're about to hear from Victoria Sharp, who on January 26th, was traveling northbound with Lavoie Finicum, Ryan Bundy, and Samantha Cox. Now, both Ryans, Lavoie, and Samantha Cox were involved with, well, I guess you would say the occupation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge outside of Burns, Oregon. Contentious situation going on. They were traveling to a community meeting. They were actually invited along with Ammon Bundy and Buddha, his bodyguard, and another person by the name of Mark McConnell. They were driving in a separate vehicle, a Jeep CJ. They were going up Highway 395 towards John Day. When they were pulled over, several people were arrested that night, except for Victoria Sharp. Victoria Sharp was not arrested. She had come along as a hitchhiker of sorts to go up to the meeting in John Day and become part of the choir. And they were going to be singing for the invited guest that night, who happened to be the Bundy Group. Now, they were going to be talking about the which is an important concept to remember in this whole discussion about what's going on in Burns, Oregon. So here we go with the testimony of a very, very courageous 18-year-old girl by the name of Victoria Sharp.
Thank you so much. It needs me to be investigated and explored over this whole thing that happened. I really hope that the people in the United States demand that they're able to see the evidence and that they have a fair chance to see what really happened that day. And I would like to talk to them and tell them what I've seen, what I saw when I was there, and what I heard, and what I know about the whole situation. I would wonder why the FBI cleared the scene within 24 hours and took away all the evidence. And I would like people to see the truck that we were in, see how many bullet holes and under that truck while we were in it. And not just for me, but for the family of Lavoie. For him, for his death, how much his death go for nothing, for freedom, and peace, and take up the torch where he left for his family. So it was actually, I think it was a truck with something on the back, like a cover on the back of the truck. It was white, and I believe it was Lavoie's truck. So, we started out about 3:30, and Lavoie was driving the vehicle, and Ryan Payne was in the right passenger seat, and Ryan Bundy was in the left back seat next to me. I was in the middle, and on my right in the back. And I was actually, the reason I was in the vehicle with them was because my mom and I, well, all of my siblings and I were going to sing this meeting that we were going to have. And a sheriff in John Day. Well, I had been outside and doing some stuff, so I hadn't gotten ready with them because I was running kind of late, and they were leaving at 3 o'clock in my mom's van. And so Ryan Payne, if it would be okay if I went with them, and he said sure. So we were going to go and meet with my mom, who was already who had left at around 3 o'clock. So we started out about 3:30. And we were driving. He was relaxed and in a good mood. And I remember, Ryan Payne put the GPS on to get to John Day, to the place where we were going. And I remember he said something about GPS working way better than his vehicle GPS. And I remember Ryan Bundy asked me how my trip from Montana, because I came down from Montana, Monday evening to meet with my family that was already in Oregon.
Yeah.
So he asked me how my trip went, and I said it went pretty good, except for I hit a deer. I told him about that, and I remember Shauna Cox saying something about there being two people with the name Ryan in the same track, and then boy talking about his daughters, and I remember him saying that they were very beautiful. And it was mostly small talk. Oh, I remember Ryan Bundy said something about a trailer that he had seen for sale, and we're going to check it out for someone who might be coming. And so was really, really tired because I had driven a lot, almost 15 hours between Sunday and Monday. And so I fell asleep on Ryan Bunny's shoulder. Mm. So then I woke up kind of suddenly because Ryan moved to look behind us. And when I woke up, I heard them saying in the car, I was pulling over Ammon. And the vehicle behind us was a Jeep, and Mark was in the vehicle. Mark was driving. Mark McConnell, I believe that's his name. And Andy and Buddha. And I remember pulling over the vehicle that Ammon was in. And we could see a bunch of vehicles behind us, a lot of them. They were big vehicles in black, and there were a lot of lights. And the boy said that he didn't think it would be safe. He didn't think it was a good idea. And he said, I'm not going to pull over. And he slowed his vehicle down, and we pulled up out behind us. When a vehicle with lights and sirens pulled behind us, he slowed down, but he didn't stop for a while, and then he stopped. And he rolled down his window, and we could hear the men behind us. They were shouting, and they were telling him to turn off his vehicle and to put his hands out the window.
Okay.
I don't remember any profanity. I was going to shut off the vehicle and put his hands out the window. And he immediately put his hands out the window.
Yeah.
He didn't turn the vehicle off, though, and he said, he shouted it back to them. He said, I'm not going to turn off the vehicle. We're going to see the sheriff, and you need to leave us alone. And he put his head out the window, and he had his hands out the window still, and he said that they could either put a bullet through his head, that they had a clear shot, or that they need to leave us alone and the sheriff. And they kept shouting at him, and there was lasers all over us, these red lasers, and so I knew that they were aiming guns at us, and I was scared they would shoot us. And so I shouted, Maxi, I said, please don't shoot us. And Ryan Payne, who was in the right front seat, he said, we have women in the vehicle. And so they said, well, have the women get out of the vehicle. Well, they had a lot of, like, well, how do they want us to get out?
Yeah.
So Ryan said, well, I'll see how they want you guys to get out. So he put both of his hands out the window. This is Ryan Payne. Put his hands out the window and his head, and he said, the women are going to get out of the vehicle. Well, then all of us shot, and he ducked back in the vehicle. And I was like, and he goes, they just shot at me. And I was like, I'm not getting out. Because he didn't do anything, you know, aggressive. He had his hands up the vehicle, and he just got shot at. And so I said, don't make me get out. So we were standing there, and Shauna Cox told me to get down, and I was kind of halfway down a little bit. So then Ryan Payne kept talking to them. And this time, Shauna Cox had a camera, and she was videotaping. And Murray Bunny was videotaping with his phone. And before they started videotaping, I remember Ryan Bunny tried to make a phone call. I think he was trying to call Sheriff Palmer.
Yes.
But we didn't have any cell service. And so he couldn't make the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And so then after they shot at Ryan and he got back in the vehicle, he started talking to them from inside the vehicle, and then he told them to get out. So he told them that he was getting out of the vehicle, and so they gave him direction. And I remember they told him to put his hands on the back of his head and to walk backwards, and then I think they arrested him. Mm-hmm. That soon after that, Lloyd was still talking to the men behind us, and he told them to stand down, that we were going to see the sheriff. And I remember him telling us that we had 50 miles left to go and that they'd be safe. I suppose he meant once we got into the other county, that we'd be safe. And I knew he was trying to get me to my mom, get me to safety and everybody else to safety.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he told us after a minute or two, he said, guys, I'm going to go. So Shauna and Brian and I got all the way on the floor, and he started driving. And it didn't feel too fast because I was down on the floor, and I didn't feel like it was for very long. think of three-quarters of a mile to a mile. And I remember during that time, I thought they would shoot right away.
Mm.
Because I remember somebody running saying that they might shoot the tires out of the vehicle if you started driving. Slowing that down. Just in case we didn't want to get hit if you started firing.
Yeah.
But I remember we kind of popped up and looked out the vehicle, and we could see that the police car was pursuing us. And Ryan said the meeting. And then about right after that, I think the boy came upon the roadblock.
Yes.
And I don't know if he saw it ahead of time, because
I don't think he did, because I looked come around the corner, and it's impossible to see the roadblock when you're coming around the corner until you've turned, and he only had 2 or 3 seconds to veer to the left, and instead of crashing into the cars, he went into the snowbank.
I don't remember him saying anything about a roadblock. I just remember hitting a snow—he swerved, and we had a snowbank.
And there was an agent. Now, let me ask you, there was an agent that hopped out in front of the car, and it looked like he fired a gun through as he hopped out in front of the car. Did you see or hear any bullets coming through the windshield?
I did not see the agent, because at this point we were down, because when we hit the snowbank, then we heard bullets. It sounded from the back and the front. When we were going in that snowbank, because we went for several feet, so while we were moving in the snowbank, there were a lot of bullets hitting the vehicle from the front and back. And as soon as we came to a stop, I thought the vehicle might tip. Right then is when I thought, oh, we're gonna die. We're gonna die, because they were shooting at us and the vehicle was going kind of wild, it felt like. And so I thought we would die.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the vehicle came to a stop, the boy opened his door, and I kind of popped up a little bit because the bullet stopped coming when the vehicle stopped. So Ryan and I popped the boy, and he got up, and he put his hands up and started walking towards the back of the vehicle, and he was shouting.
Did he say anything to you before he got out, like, stay here, or I'm going to go out?
And I don't know if he was hit. He could have been hit because there was a lot of bullets coming in the front.
Yeah.
He was standing right there. He wasn't ducked down.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing holes in the windshield where so he may have been hit.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Yes.
But I just know that as soon as it came to a stop, he opened the door and he got out with his hands up and started walking and saying, if you're going to shoot, then just shoot me. And because he had his hands up and he wasn't being aggressive.
Yeah.
And I knew he was stumbling because there's a lot of snow there.
Yeah.
About 3 feet of snow or so.
Yeah.
And he was stumbling and losing his balance a little bit, but he had his hands up the whole time. And then the next thing we knew, they shot him, like 3 consecutive shots, right at the same time hit him. And I ducked down immediately. Ryan and I both ducked. And so then we heard 3 more shots, but they didn't hit. So we were like, oh, they just shot him when he was down already.
So you heard 3 shots, pop, pop, pop. And momentarily later, you heard 3 more, pop, pop, pop.
Yes, we saw him go down right at the first 3 shots. And then we got down when those shots went off. And then we heard 3 more shots.
Were the shots from the tree line, or
they came from
the left?
When they started firing at our vehicle, most of the shots were coming from the left of the tree line.
Got it.
So I believe, and I know that the first 3 came from the tree line. I didn't see the second 3, but I heard them.
Did you see the men in the tree line? Did you see them in their positions?
I could see them once I got out of the vehicle.
Yeah.
So after he got shot the second 3 times and I was down, I was horrified. I was like, oh my God. And I wasn't sure if he was dead or if he was bleeding out. But I said, I'm an EMT. I started shouting that I'm an EMT. Please let me help him. So I started saying that. Then the vehicle started getting riddled with bullets.
So they started shooting at your vehicle when you shouted out that you were an emergency medical, like you're an emergency medical technician, you've called, and they start shooting at your vehicle.
At the vehicle, yes. And they were shooting a lot. There was a lot of bullets flying, and you just hunkered down in there, and he was on my left, but he had turned, so he was down in the floor, but he was kind of leaning off the seat. He got hit in the right shoulder, and he said, oh, I got hit. And I was asking if he was okay. The bullets just kept coming, and we started screaming, please stop, Shauna and I did. And Ryan was still recording at the time, so was Shauna, but they just had, their cameras down. You could hear everything, though.
Yes.
Please stop, and just kept shooting.
Yes.
It seemed from, all directions.
Yes.
But mostly on the left side. There was a lot of bullets coming on that left side.
Okay.
And so we just kept screaming and trying to stay down because we would see if, a laser hit our knee, and then we'd move and so we wouldn't get shot. And it was really horrifying. And they didn't give us the option to get out of the vehicle, find out what they wanted. And we wondered, did they want us to get out? Did they want us to, what do they want? And they won't give us any options. They were just shooting. And then the tear gas.
Yeah, the flashbang.
It came in. It kind of looked like a bluish, whitish smoke.
Yeah.
And then it hit our noses, and it was gas, and we were choking, and it burned, and we were trying to breathe. It was really hard to breathe. We wanted to get out of the vehicle because it was really bad, but we couldn't because they kept shooting. And if we would have opened the vehicle, we would have been shot.
Yeah.
And so we just stayed where we were, and we were screaming, please, please stop. And remember, screaming, there was a little stop in it. In the bullets, and someone said, oh, there's women in there. But they kept shooting, and they didn't stop. They didn't see if we wanted to get out. They didn't give us any options to do it. Nothing. They just kept shooting, and we gassed us four more times. So I think altogether we were gassed 5 times. It would go away a little bit, and then it would come again, the big wave of the gas. And
on your right, the police that were on your right hand side acknowledged that there were women in the car. They knew,
yep.
And they voiced it, and they said it, yep, loudly.
Yes, there were. They sounded to the right and back of us.
Got it.
I could hear them in the car, or it was a truck, and they said there's women in there, and then they continued to shoot. And it seemed 5 to 10 minutes that we were in the vehicle, and we were trying to find something white. Any of us has a white garment that we could maybe find something to cut it out the window or throw it out the window, because the window was busted out from bullets on the left side.
Yes.
And we couldn't think of anything. And so we just stayed there. We were just screaming for them to please stop. Please stop.
Yeah.
And then finally, when there was a little, I was like, well, they want surrender? I don't know. So I started screaming, surrender. And after a minute or so, they, someone shouted to open the left vehicle with their arms, the left door with their hands up. And so I did that. I kind of crawled over with my hands up, and I opened the left door, and
yep,
I had my hands up, and they said to have Ryan get out first and stay right there with my hands up. So I did, and Ryan got out first, and they gave him directions how to get around. It was 20 lasers on me, as I was standing there. You could see men dressed in black, dressed in camo in the trees, pointing their guns at me. So then after Ryan got out, then they had they had me walk that way and sidestep, and they had me turn around and walk backwards. And someone said stop, and then someone grabbed me by the hair, and they started screaming in my ear, who's in the vehicle? How many in that vehicle? And I said that there was just me. And then they dragged me over, and they told me to lay on my stomach, and threw me down and they cuffed me behind my back. And they said, what's the lady's name who's in the vehicle? And I said, I remember. I knew that her name started with an S, but I had just met her and I couldn't remember her name. So I said, it started with an S, but I can't remember her name. And so what did she introduce herself as? And I said, she didn't introduce herself with a name. And so they finally just let me sit up, in a cuff, and they got Sean out of the vehicle. And then they started asking us if anyone else was in there. And we said no. And they said, they're about to die.
Were they painful? Were they rude? Were they rough? Were they aggressive when they were physically manhandling you?
At the very beginning, when they first started, yes, they were very rough. Especially handled me. I don't know who he was, but he grabbed me by the hair and he pulled my hair and he was screaming in my ear and he was very rude. So and then they started asking if anyone else was in the vehicle, that if there was anyone else in the vehicle, that they were about to die. And then they started shooting the vehicle again.
If there's anyone in the vehicle, they're about to die. They didn't take any shots. They didn't have any weapons. They had their hands out. They said they were women in the car, and yet the police said to you, if there's anyone else in there, they're about to die.
Yes, we were telling them there's else in there, and they said, well, if there is, they're about to die. And so they started shooting at the vehicle.
They started shooting at the vehicle again after you told them, after you had announced that a woman, Shauna, was in the car, that there was no danger.
This was after Shauna was out. Shauna got out, and we were asking her, they were asking Shauna and me if there was anyone else in the vehicle.
Yes.
And we said that if there was, that they were about to die, and that's when they started shooting at
us. And then they started shooting again to kill anyone in the vehicle.
Yes. Anyone who had not gotten out. And there wasn't anyone in there, unfortunately, but they started shooting again.
To kill anything that might have been in there, that may have been, you know, no interest in anything that they had or said, just wanted to kill anything in there.
So then we're sitting on the road. I was really, really cold. My teeth were chattering. I do remember one man was crying. He had state police written on his back, and I remember I was crying. I could see LaVoy lying there in the snow, his hands. I can't believe they shot him. I can't believe they killed him. And he came over and he tapped me on his shoulder, and he said, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And
how many other kinds of uniforms? There was a state police, you said. What other crimes can you remember?
So I remember two kinds of vehicles. Two kinds of uniforms. There were only three, because there were men with FBI on their back, and there were some in black with FBI on their back, and there were also some men with vests on that had state police on their back. So those were three. Most of the guys. FBI on their back. They were just maybe three or four that had state police on their back.
The rude one that was rough and harsh with you, was he state police or FBI, or do you know?
He was FBI. He was an FBI man. Because I remember afterwards, because he was still there. He was the one who cuffed me. So he was standing there, and I think I remember him having a red beard.
Red beard. Did they say their names at all? Any titles? I'm officer, I'm in charge.
They just had FBI on their back, and then some of them had, a couple of them. The ones that were further back that started coming up, not from the trees, but from the vehicles, some of them had state police on their back.
Did any of them look to you strange, wild, weird, anything, any vibes, any spiritual feelings you had when these men were coming around you after all this?
You know, they kind of looked amused to me. They seemed, because I could see LaVoy's dead body, and they seemed amused, and they were laughing, and they were talking together, and a couple of them didn't. Some of the guys that, especially the state police, didn't seem as, think it was so funny. They seemed a little bit more caring. than the FBI guys did, but I remember the FBI guys, it seemed like they thought the whole thing was really funny.
You went back, and there was and you initially were stopped before Mr. LaVoy started accelerating again to get out of there, that when the announcement was made for a woman in the car, there was laughter before they started shooting at the car. Remember the first time when you were on the road, any laughter, any heckling, anything like that?
You know, I couldn't hear them really well, so I can't say that I remember hearing laughter. I do remember that we were going to get out, but they shot at him.
Yes.
But I don't remember laughter the first time.
When
the
they shot
the car that was in front of you when Reiner went around the corner, what color was that car?
The car that was that the roadblock?
Yes.
I couldn't see the roadblock. I was kind of far down. I felt him swerve and hit the snow, but I didn't see the roadblock. I was super down too.
So Mr. LaVoy, when he was shot, did you hear any laughter or boasting or anything that was rude about the men after they shot Mr. LaVoy, that they were celebrating his death?
It was not directly after, because directly after I started shouting that I was an EMT to please let me him, and directly as I started saying that, then they started firing on our vehicle. So I didn't hear them laughing and talking about it until after we had gotten out of the vehicle and we were sitting cuffed on the ground. And then I saw them around him laughing, and I thought it was so disrespectful and so rude and so wrong.
What were they laughing about, do you think? About the shot, that one of them was proud of their ability to shoot him in the head, or proud that they were a militiaman, or proud that they had served Obama or some sort of political agenda? What do you think they were laughing and celebrating?
I couldn't tell you. They seemed proud of the fact that they had shot him, but I can't say that they were laughing about. I could hear them talking, but I don't know exactly what they were saying.
Okay.
Yeah, Victoria, the big question to me is, you shouted out that you're an EMT. Did you see them render at any time medical assistance or even check for a pulse? Any point in time was LaVoy laid there on the snow?
No. As soon as they shot him, then they started to shoot at our vehicle. So there was no time between then, between them shooting him and then us. And then after the vehicle, no one, they were just simply standing around him, laughing. No one checked to see if he was still alive. No one checked to see if he needed medical attention. Nothing of that nature. And Ryan, when we were sitting on the pavement, I remember that he had said he got shot, and so I asked him how his shoulder was, and he said, well, it hurts, but I don't see a whole lot of blood, so, and then he said, well, let me look. So he said, oh, there's a bullet in his arm. But right then I said, I promise I'll cooperate if you let me help him, because no one seemed to be helping him. And they said, no, I'm sure we have plenty enough that can deal with this. You're fine. You can just stay right there. But no one tended to him until an ambulance got there, and that was a while later.
Did they find a gun on him?
I'm not sure. I can't remember, because I was in the vehicle when Ryan exited the vehicle. If they did, it was never touched. It was still holstered. Because I can't remember if he had a gun or not. So, but I do know that in the ambulance, they kept him on scene for at least 2 hours, I believe. At least 2 hours. So they did not take him to the hospital immediately after he was shot.
Did you see any of the men with the on their person or in their holsters or anything when they were in the car when they got out?
I know that the boy had a gun holstered, and I know that Ryan Payne did have a gun. It was also holstered. I can't remember if Ryan had a gun or not. I can't remember.
Okay.
And then Shauna didn't have a gun.
And then when you were on the cement, you were handcuffed. What point when they were ready to anything else really jump at you. We've had the guys laughing and cackling and celebrating their kill, and they've got you in handcuffs. They've riddled the car with bullets. Was there any cleanup or anything that struck you odd that either clean up on the scene or with the car or whispering things or anything jump out?
You know, they moved us, so we didn't get to see a whole lot of what they did afterwards. They kept us there for about 2 hours, but took us down to the first scene where we stopped originally and they fired the first shot.
Yeah.
So they kept us there for an hour or so. So during that time, I'm not sure what they did to the scene because we couldn't see.
Yeah. Did you see anything like that from Lavoie or any of the stuff that should still be there if they didn't sanitize it?
I didn't, because I was trying to follow orders. I remember them telling me follow the next voice, orders from the next voice, yep. Which was kind of hard because there was about 3 or 4 guys yelling at me at the same time, and I was like, which one?
Yeah.
So, but I was trying to just not get shot, so I wasn't really, except for the fact that he's up with his hands still up.
Yeah.
I couldn't see if there was blood or. They shot a lot of rounds with that vehicle.
Victoria, I have one more question about Lavoie's gun. We've seen pictures of Lavoie with a large holster on his right-hand side. Is that the gun that you're talking about? It was holstered on his right-hand side?
Yes, it's a gun holstered on his right-hand side.
The big, with the beige-colored holster?
Yes.
Okay.
So that probably leads to him being shot in the left side, as you remarked, Paul, because yep. His holster was not on his left, it was on his right, and we see him reaching over to his left as he shot the first time,
right.
And then he goes down.
Go ahead, Victoria, go ahead.
And with him reaching over to his left side, I looked at that video, I watched it a lot of times really closely, and I was like, he's not reaching because I was there. I watched the whole thing. And I remember it firsthand. And I don't think he was reaching. I feel like he was losing his balance.
Right.
And he's kind of moving around. His hands are no longer up this high, but his hands are still, like, right here.
Yeah.
I don't think he was reaching for anything. Yeah. I think he was trying to keep his balance.
So you go down to the first location once more. You're held there. Were any of the other men... you know, that you were with Ammon Bundy or the others, were they saying anything that struck out to you, or they were upset or anything, or were they just silent and just continuing forward?
Once we were in the vehicle down at the other site, they put the other 4 guys in the vehicle with us, and I mean, this is really embarrassing I'm about to tell you, but I might as well just say it. We all had to use the bathroom. But I had been waiting, actually, since I was in a hurry when I got in at 3:30, and I had been waiting since then.
Yeah.
I had to go. And we told the we were outside of the vehicle, which was Deputy Needham, I think was his name, Needham,
yeah.
And another police or sheriff deputy that was standing outside of the vehicle. We told them that I needed to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
Could they let me go? And they said no. They said that I had to wait. And I waited for like another 30 minutes. And I asked them again. They said no. So finally I was like, I just got to relieve myself in here.
Yeah.
And so my cousins, I used to have a game with my 9 siblings. We used to have this game where we'd tie each other up and try to get out. And we would time each other to see how long it would take to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of knew how to slip out of cuffs, and I was using they had used zip ties.
Yeah.
So I was able to slip out of the, I told Sean, I was like, I think I can get out of these. She was sitting next to me, and she's like, well, just slip out of them and put your jeans down, relieve yourself, and put them back on.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Wow. So
I slipped out. She said, if they see you, they're just going to put them on a lot tighter. I said, yeah, I know. But I got to use the bathroom really bad.
Yeah.
So I slipped out of the cuff and I pulled my jeans down and I relieved myself in the corner.
Yeah.
And then I was about to up and someone saw that I had my cuffs off. And they said, hey, why do you have your cuffs off? And I said, I told you I had to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I said, I'll put them back on in just a second. Let me pull my jeans up. And so they tried to open the, they opened the door and they were, I'm not dressed. Give me a second.
Yeah.
So I pulled my jeans back up and then I put my cuffs back on and they said to come out there and they tightened them up. And then I couldn't get out of them.
Yeah.
But then, so we sat for a while and I remember when they first got in the vehicle, when the men first got in the vehicle, they asked what had happened. Said they couldn't really hear or see much at all. Yeah. Said they had heard some gunshots, but they couldn't really tell when the boy was killed.
Yeah.
And that Ryan Bundy had a bullet in his shoulder. And I remember Ammon Bundy was really, really, it really made him really upset. As far as sad, he put his head down and just to give him, to give Ammon some, a couple minutes of silence. And so we were all quiet for a little while and let him grieve.
Yeah.
And then we talked a little bit about the events and what had happened, and they told us what happened. And it was a really sad time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you continued on to, I want to get to what the interrogation room, what they said to you when they took you into the police office. Did they try and intimidate you, scare you, threaten you, or apologize profusely, this should never have happened, or treat you like a little girl, or try and manipulate any information out of you? What sort of things can you remember?
You know, they didn't ask a whole lot of questions. When I got to the sheriff's office, they brought me, I was really distraught at this time. I didn't want to from everyone. I was myself, and I was scared. And they had, I remember that Ryan Payne, when we were in the vehicle, he told me, he said, if they take you into custody, he said, you don't have to say anything. He said, you can ask for a lawyer. So I, when I went in there, there was a man that introduced, I don't think he gave me his name. He just said he was from the FBI. And there was a woman there, and she didn't say where she was from. And they said that him and my age, and there's just some personal questions about myself and my car and where it was. And then they said they wanted me to tell them about what had happened at this incident. They wanted me to tell them the story. And I said I didn't want to speak to a lawyer. They said, they kind of looked at each other and then they said, well, actually, you're not under arrest. You're free to go. So we just wanted to talk to you, about this though. We just wanted to get your side of the story. Talk to them about it. I knew that it was probably not a good idea. So I told them I just wanted to call my mom and go with her. And, so they said they'd try to find a phone that I could call my mom off of. And then I went and got my coat and then I found that bag next to my coat, so I tried to call my mom, but I couldn't, and because she was not picking up her phone, it was going to voicemail, and then eventually she called me back from another number, but I was waiting probably 20-25 minutes, and they wanted to just drop me off at McDonald's, and they said, well, my mom said that she didn't want to come to the sheriff's office to come and get me, that there was no way to come get me or have someone come and get me that was safe. She said there was roadblocks up and they couldn't get to me. And they were like,
You're 17 or you're 18? You're 18.
18, but I have my car with me. So
did anyone demonstrate a concern and a care for a young, pretty young lady and this time of day and wanting to make sure that you are safe and not in any way jeopardized in any situation for what they're doing to you and drop you off somewhere next?
You know, they said, I think they wanted to see my mom. And so they were saying, well, we're not dropping. They said, we'll drop you off at McDonald's. And then they said, when I said, well, my mom, well, you can do that, and then come pick me up. I'll meet with her. And they said, well, then they kind of looked at each other, and then they said, well, you know what? We're not going to do that unless we know that someone is coming to pick you up. And then they kind of suddenly changed their mind after about 10 minutes. And stop at McDonald's and they can come get you. And they said, if anybody hasn't picked you up within an hour to an hour and a half, they gave me a number and they said, call this number and we'll come get you. And they said, and if you want to talk, then we'll talk to us and tell us what happened. And I said, okay. So then they said they were taking me to McDonald's, but then they ended up stopping at Safeway and dropping me off at Safeway instead. And they did give me that my nose and my throat were burning from the tear gas.
Yes.
They gave me a bottle of water, and then they dropped me off and they left.
Yes.
And I was crying at this point. I was.
Yeah.
I was just.
It all came like a deluge. Yeah. It all arrives. You showed enormous strength to have gone through a combat situation, which many men crumble into fetus positions. Men, you as a young woman, have behaved strong and with courage. I'm deeply impressed.
Thank you. But it did hit me.
Yeah.
That dropped me off, and I was like, whoa, it was a lot. And I started crying, and I walked into the grocery store. And one of the ladies saw me, and she said, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. I just need to use the bathroom. Can you point me that way? And so she did, and then I came back outside, and I was trying to make a phone call, but no one was answering. I don't know if it was at service or they were trying to figure something out. They didn't want to be traced or what, but I couldn't get a hold of anyone, and I was standing there all alone, and I was just crying. Yeah. And then one of the other cashiers came out and she asked me if she could do anything for me. And I told her I was just trying to get a hold of someone to pick me up. And she asked if I'd like to sit in the back of the store. So I went, I did. And so I went back to the back of the and I was sitting there and I called someone. My phone was blowing up with people from Montana, some of my friends. They were trying to find out if I was safe, if I had been shot, what had happened. And so I tried to send them all a brief message that I was fine. I was just trying to get a hold of someone, pick me up. And so I got on the phone with someone who knew that I was waiting, someone who I used to live with in Montana. And they started talking to me, and I was telling them the story. And one of the ladies from the grocery store overheard me telling, and she came in and she said she was so sorry about everything. And then while I was talking to her, then a group of four people came in, my mom on the phone, and they said they were here to pick me up and take me to safety. And I talked to my mom, and they took me and they gave me water and food, and they got me a shower, and they took me from there.
The situation there, are you hearing any things about the growing momentum and the anger about what they did in putting that man to death? Have you heard anything that you want to?
You know, I've heard that the people of Burns are upset about it, and I'm really glad. I really hope that the people of this nation hold the government accountable for what they did, and that they don't just let it go. And it doesn't become the new normal. I remember, this might sound really funny, but I'm a Hunger Games fan. I love that book series and that movie series. And I remember when I was going to go out to Oregon, I was pretty much just going out there to sing with my family. But I remember people telling me, oh, you shouldn't go. And they said, what if the FBI like storms that place and kills everyone? I said, you know, I'm not... I said, I just want to go there, and I said, I want to be a voice. I said, he's like, what do you mean? I said, I want to be a Mockingjay. and I feel like this situation, I remember also when I was in the vehicle, the van, but they were taking all of us to Payne, and all of us were in there. Ryan Payne, after they cuffed me tighter, I was sitting in the front seat, and I was sitting in front of Ryan Payne, and I looked back at him, and he said, I'm so sorry that I ever let you come, so that you shouldn't have been through. And I said, no, I'm not. Yes. I said, because now I'm a voice.
Yes.
Now I have a story to tell. And I said, and now his the death of this man isn't going to to be nothing.
Yes.
Because I can tell what happened. And now I can tell people, you know, that they need to stand up for what's right and not let this go for nothing. Because he shouldn't. He should not have died. They should not have killed him that way.
Yes.
And people need to do something about it.
Yes.
I want to get my story out, and I want justice done for this man. And something that was on my heart today, I was talking with someone about the men that are still in that refuge, four men that are still there. You know, they can leave and save their lives, or they can die, stay there and die. Or if a bunch of people go, and it doesn't have to be militant, it doesn't have to be crazy, but if there are a ton of people, the FBI can't go in and kill a bunch of women. I mean, they can. They've proven that they will.
Yeah.
But if a lot of people, like I'm talking about hundreds or thousands of people go there, those men will be protected. I really wish that we could make a call for people to go there, to the refuge, and stand by those men and say, don't you dare kill those men. They haven't done anything wrong. I really wish we could make a call for that to happen. And keep those four men alive. Who knows that if they stay there, they're going to lose their lives. And even people who aren't Christians, but people who love liberty, they can stand with them too, who has it in their soul.
Yes.
That, you know, the law that God has written on our heart, that love of anyone who has that in them, just stand by these men. Don't let them be killed.
Victoria, good job, and our thoughts and prayers are with you and the family of Lavoie, and your family as well. There's going to be a lot of strength that you can derive from everybody. My show anytime, we'll be in touch with various people and so on. We know a lot of people, actually, mutually, between yourself and myself and other people. With Clive and Bundy was a guest out at the Liberty Tour two times. I know Buddha very well, and he knows me. Bubba one time. Don't ever do that to Buddha. Don't ever call it, you know what I mean. So we will touch and Godspeed, and we're going to do everything we possibly can to protect you and take care of you.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism Network.